Vermont Congressman Peter Welch and executives with Ben & Jerry's and other food industry firms last week criticized a move in Congress to preempt state laws requiring special labels for food with genetically modified ingredients. Welch says the federal proposal should be allowed to die. Vermont and two other states have GMO labeling laws in place. New York state lawmakers are considering similar legislation. Dr. Margaret Smith of Cornell University joins us now. Dr. Smith joined the faculty at Cornell University in 1987 in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences Department of Plant Breeding and Genetics, focusing on corn breeding. She'll present a talk entitled GMOs, Just the Facts, tonight at the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Rensselaer County Conference Room. And nice to have you here, Dr. Smith.
Thank you very much.
Before we start talking about the controversy, let's get a little background. One thing many people might not realize is that genetically modified organisms have been with us for a very long time.
Yeah, that's correct. The first of the genetically engineered crops were actually marketed in the mid-1990s, so it's been about 20 years now that they've been a part of our food system.
But as far as genetically modified, now I know there is a difference between genetic engineering and genetically modified, but genetically modified organisms go back thousands of years, right?
Yeah, that becomes a bit of a question of definitions, but it is a point I like to make because I think it's important for people to understand. We as humans have been tinkering with the genetics of the foods we eat, our crops and our livestock, for as long as we have been consuming them. So dating back to when agriculture first began, the earliest domestication process was a process of selecting plants that were actually mutants. They were created by mistakes in copying the genetic code, but they happened to be ones that were more useful to us as humans. So, for example, plants where the seeds didn't drop off the stem when they were mature, they were a lot easier to gather if they stayed stuck on that stem. Those are the kind of things we've selected for thousands and thousands of years, with the result that our domesticated crops really don't look much of anything like the natural wild ancestors they came from. So there has been, as you point out, this history of thousands of years of genetic change that has gone into creating the domesticated crops and the domesticated livestock that we rely on now.
Of course, genetic engineering is another level entirely, and based on the presentation that you have given and are giving tonight at the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Rensselaer County, genetic engineering goes another step, and this requires a more scientific intervention.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'm not trying to tell anybody that genetic engineering is the same thing we've been doing for the past 7,000 or 8,000 years. It is a new tool. It is a new technique. But I think the place where people often go astray is in thinking that our domesticated vegetables and fruits and grains are somehow these very natural things. And that's not accurate. They have been changed dramatically from what they were in nature. Genetic engineering is now a new and different way to do that, and as such, we should examine it carefully.
Based on your presentation, again, it's so fascinating. There are basically three types of genetic engineering in agriculture: insect-resistant, herbicide-resistant, and virus-resistant. And what exactly is done to make a plant more, let's say, insect-resistant?
Yeah, I'll get to your question, but I just want to also clarify that there are a few additional new types of genetically engineered crops that have just come into the picture recently. The three you mentioned, the insect resistance, herbicide resistance, and virus resistance, are the vast majority of what's being grown commercially right now. So with the insect resistance, for example, the way people created that was to study the genetic code of a bacterium, and it's called Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a bacterium that actually causes disease in insects. You know, the same way we get a bacteria, we get sick. The insect consumes this bacteria, or it gets inside the insect's body and makes the insect sick. So it was a bacteria that was a disease of certain kinds of caterpillar and beetle insects. They studied the genetics of that bacteria and identified the one gene in its genetic code that produced a protein that, when the insect consumed that, was converted into something toxic. Now, it's really important for people to understand that this is a protein that unless it's altered inside an insect's gut, is pretty innocuous. The conversion to a toxin happens only in an alkaline gut, a gut that's really high pH. Mammals and birds and a whole array of other organisms have acid guts. So this protein we can eat, and it doesn't become anything. It gets broken down. It does not become toxic. But in those alkaline insect guts, it's converted into a toxin and kills the insect. That's the same way the bacteria acts in nature, and it's the same property of that bacteria that people took advantage of when they created organic insecticides from it. So you can actually spray the bacterium itself onto your crops to help control insects if you're an organic farmer or a homeowner. It's been sold in a number of products, things that are called like Thuricide and other things like that, are just pesticides made from the bacterium itself. In the genetically engineered crop, they found that gene in the bacteria that produces that protein and built it into the crop, like corn or cotton. And then the corn or the cotton produces that same protein, which when an insect eats it, a caterpillar or beetle-type insect, is converted into this toxin that kills the insect.
We are joined today by Dr. Margaret Smith, who will be presenting GMOs, Just the Facts, tonight at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Rensselaer County. This is a very polarized and polarizing issue. In a nutshell, where is the controversy? Is it economic or is it fears for the future of our health?
Well, I guess the only way I could fit that answer into a nutshell would be to say yes. There are dimensions of it that are represent people's concerns about health and safety. There are dimensions of it that are arising from concerns about large industry and how much of the agricultural system and the food system they influence or control. There are dimensions of it that have to do with environmental concerns and whether it's good, bad, or indifferent for the environment to use some of these crops. And there are concerns from just a place of concern about whether this is ethically right or wrong to do.
Is it ethically right to do?
Well, that I'm a scientist, and that's not a question science is ever going to answer. That's the kind of question we all answer through our political discourse and our societal discussion about what we find to be right and wrong. I think with this issue, like any other issue you might choose, there are both scientific dimensions to what we need to think about, and then there are these societal values. Do we think this is right or wrong? Do we think it's good or bad? Those really play out in the legislative system, in our political system.
We've been speaking with Dr. Margaret Smith of Cornell University. She will present a talk entitled GMOs, Just the Facts, tonight at the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Rensselaer County Conference Room. Dr. Smith, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Midday Magazine on WAMC.